the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, The End of Secularism. Very fascinating statement, isn't it? Of course, it's not just a statement. It's a book title. The book is by Hunter Baker, who is Associate Provost and Professor of Government at Houston Baptist University. And we're going to have a conversation with Dr. Baker coming up in just a few moments. I'm encouraged by this book. I've done an awful lot of work in the same area, and I want to tell you, this is good stuff. What Hunter Baker is looking at here is the collapse of the experiment of secularization and its theory. It's the collapse of the hope of so many that we would inherit a secular future. There are a lot of people frustrated by that, but the analysis that Hunter Baker offers in this book is really important. It's published by Crossway Books. It's an important book. This is going to be an important conversation. We'll get to it in just a moment, but let me just give you a little foretaste of what's going to come. In this interview, we're going to talk about why so many people not only thought that faith and belief in God would recede in a secular age, but they not only hoped, they not only thought it, they hoped it. They not only prophesied that it would happen, they were pretty much banking on it. And it just so happened that it didn't turn out quite that way. It's not to deny that there is a process of secularization. We're not going to deny that in certain parts of the world it has made a big difference, in Europe in particular, and amongst some in the intelligentsia here in the United States and beyond. But in terms of a mass global movement, it just hasn't turned out the way they had expected it. And we're going to talk today not only from a kind of political, sociological, anthropological analysis of the fact that it's true, but from a theological analysis of why it's true, why it is that it turns out the future is, if anything, profoundly not secular. We'll get to that interview in just a moment with Hunter Baker, but first of all, review some issues in the news. It was a busy weekend in terms of the news, lots of analysis. You know, we're reaping right now the whirlwind of an awful lot of what is going on out there in political expectation and in current events. So you just think about all the worldview implications of what is swirling around us. So you've got the president right now in China. And even as the president is going to China, there are grave concerns about how the president of the United States should conduct himself and relate to the regime in China with such significant human rights abuses being brought to the fore. Even as the president arrives in China, report about coerced abortions, report about, again, the autocratic rule. You have Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, who has been already criticized for appearing to say that when it comes to China, the administration is basically going to look the other way on human rights issues. So there will be a lot of attention as the president is in Asia about that. Now, as Christians, you know, how do we think about that? Well, we have to come back to the fact that our understanding of humanity isn't based, first of all, in what could be called human rights. It's instead is based upon the fact that every single human has a status which is beyond question as one who is made in the image of God. And yes, there are rights that are associated with that. But our defense of human rights is grounded in the fact that it's not just about humanity, but it's about a creator who made us in his image and endowed us, yes, with certain rights that are a part of the equipment of what it means to be human. And thus, so when it comes to human rights, Christians are hard-pressed to suggest that we can just put those aside. When it comes to the horror of something like coerced abortions and China's one-child-only policy, we're hard-pressed to say that that can be sacrificed as an issue in favor of virtually anything else. The other issues that are swirling around, of course, the response to the tragedy at Fort Hood. We're coming to know more and more as that story unfolds, and yet so much of what we're discovering is very, very troubling. We're discovering that there's a compartmentalization in our government, especially in law enforcement and intelligence agencies, such that the one hand did not know what the other hand was doing. But Charles Krauthammer, writing in his syndicated column, takes the argument further and very helpfully points out that this also gets to the fact that we're medicalizing mass murder. It goes back to what we've discussed on this program in recent days, that the first recourse of many persons trying to explain this is therapy. You know, this must reflect some kind of psychiatric problem. No one in his right mind would do such a thing. Well, what we're really looking at here is the lost ability of a society to say what happened there was just evil. And without discounting any kind of psychiatric or psychological issue here, it's evil any way you look at it. and the motivation is evil. And there's more to it. As Charles Krauthammer says, there's also the Muslim angle. This is a society in which we have so kind of sequestered the issue of religion, and especially of Islam. We're afraid to talk about it honestly. And it looks like someone certainly should have stood up to say, here's a man who is speaking of his Muslim beliefs in such a way that he is publicly stating that he sees his own membership in the armed services as problematic, given his Muslim identity, that he understands himself to be a soldier of Allah, far more than a soldier of the United States, even though he's wearing the uniform, and that he believes it's wrong for the United States Army to be engaged in actions in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and all kinds of troubling things were ignored. And as Charles Krauthammer says, they were ignored because people just didn't want to get labeled as being prejudiced. Of being Islamophobes. Very interesting argument, something we're going to have to watch. Another thing that's in the news that really did catch my attention, here's a headline, Representative Kennedy and Bishop in bitter rift on abortion. Now, this is kind of like looking over the fence. As evangelical Christian, we're looking over the fence here and watching what's going on in a Roman Catholic context, because this is genuinely historic. Bishop Tubin. This is Bishop Thomas J. Tubin, the Roman Catholic Bishop of Providence, Rhode Island, is engaged in a very bitter and public controversy with Representative Patrick J. Kennedy, the son of the late Senator Edward Kennedy, over the issue of abortion. Congressman Kennedy made a statement stating that the church was wrong, that is the Roman Catholic Church, for opposing health care legislation if it did not isolate abortion from that coverage. And Representative Kennedy spoke of his distaste for the church's position, and he called for the church to change. But the response from the bishop, from Bishop Tobin, was to call upon Representative Kennedy either to get with the doctrine of his church, the teaching of his church in agreement, or leave the Roman Catholic Church. And I want to tell you why this is important for all of us to consider. Because I can tell you, as an evangelical Christian, I look at this and I say, I wish we had more preachers. I wish we had more pastors in evangelical churches who would stare down some of their own members and say, what you're doing is wrong, what you're doing is directly, publicly contrary to the teachings of our church, and it just can't be compartmentalized, dear friend. You cannot compartmentalize your complicity with abortion, your complicity with this, your complicity with that, and then come on Sunday and act as if you actually worship among us as one who shares our faith and convictions. Now, what is becoming more and more apparent is that within the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church in the United States, there's a division over this kind of issue and how it is to be handled, but I'm finding it very instructive. This is very, very interesting. And it's not just about what goes on in the Roman Catholic Church. What we have in so many evangelical and Protestant churches is a failure of nerve to address the very same issues when it comes to our own members, our own friends, our own circle of acquaintances. Another story is out that basically has to do with the Roman Catholic Church, but should be also of interest to evangelicals. This is a story about Washington, D.C., where there the city council is about to pass a law that would legalize same-sex marriage, and now the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Washington says that if the law passes, the church will have to cut its social service programs dealing with adoption, homelessness, and health care. And the background of that, of course, is the fact that in the state of Massachusetts, the same-sex marriage issue there has led to the Roman Catholic Charity there in Massachusetts getting out of the adoption business. It had been engaged for many, many decades, indeed one of the longest serving adoption ministries in the United States. It closed down because no provision was made that would allow it to refrain from placing babies and young children among homosexual couples, and that violated the teaching of the church, and the state said, it doesn't matter, you're going to have to do that or go out of business. Well, Roman Catholic Charities there in Massachusetts went out of business. They don't actually involve themselves in that important ministry of adoption any longer because of this. Well, you look at that and you say, well, that's a loss for the state of Massachusetts. That's a loss for the Roman Catholic Church there in Massachusetts. Well, hold on a minute. It's a loss for every Christian institution, every religious institution in Massachusetts, because without that kind of exemption, well, the same thing would be true of a Southern Baptist adoption agency or a Lutheran adoption agency or an Orthodox Jewish adoption agency. What we are seeing here, well, to tell you the truth, it's looking frighteningly like what we talked about is going on there in China. We're looking at a constriction of liberty and it's much closer to home than we might want to admit. These issues are not of importance only to the Catholic Church, just as other cases and other challenges are not of importance only to evangelical Christians. When it comes to these issues of religious liberty, we need to be reminded that religious liberty for one means religious liberty for all, and the loss of religious liberty for one means the compromise of religious liberty for all of us. When it comes to the task of a church to hold true to its values, its convictions, its morality, it's getting tougher all the time. We'll be back for a fascinating conversation about the end of secularism on the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The intellectuals thought they had it pretty much figured out. As societies moved into a hyper-industrial age, as human beings gained control over natural processes and dammed up rivers and created hydroelectric dams, as we became accustomed to the use of technology, inevitably, the argument went, religion, faith, in particular belief in God, would recede as a meaningful part of human life. And there basically was a theory known as the theory of secularization that was so dominant for the last century, a century and a half, in the International Academy that, well, it took a real shock for at least some of the major figures trying to figure all this out to realize that it just wasn't going according to plan. At least not everywhere. Peter Berger, writing in the journal First Things back in February of 2008, wrote an article entitled Secularization Falsified. Berger himself, who is really kind of the dean of religious sociologists in the world today, he's been one of the major theorists of secularization. He came back to say that the theory, in retrospect, just didn't play out as had been expected. It did in a couple of places. Europe, for instance, especially Northern Europe, and in the American intellectual classes, what we call the intellectual elites. But he says otherwise, it turns out that human beings are not becoming secularized. Fascinating book that is out from Crossway Books right now is entitled The End of Secularism. The author is Hunter Baker, who's associate provost at Houston Baptist University, also a professor in the Department of Government there. He's an author, you may have seen his name and byline in articles in Christianity Today, National Review, Human Events, The American Spectator, and other publications. He's a blogger at First Things, Touchstone, and other places as well. Hunter Baker, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
You know, I just have to tell you that I heard about your book before it ever came out. One of your friends sent me some pages and chapters from a PDF file. Then Crossway sent me the book, and then I've been looking forward ever since to having you on this program. I love the title of your book, The End of Secularism, because it's embedded with a good deal of irony there, because the secularists were absolutely certain the book would be the end of faith in God.
That's exactly right. You know, you mentioned Peter Berger. You know, years ago, back when he still held to the theory of secularization, I guess it was about 1972, he wrote for the New York Times that the beginning of the 21st century would find only small groups of believers huddled together against the onslaught of the modern age.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why Berger is so quotable, is because he actually says what he thinks. And my favorite quote from Berger, and we'll just have to share this together, and let me share it with our listening audience, is that when Berger was talking about this massive study internationally of relative religiosity, that is just how relatively religious are different cultures, religion just talking about the kinds of things that human beings would define that way, not Christianity, but just religion. And he came up with this scale in which you had the inhabitants of the Indian subcontinent, the nation of India, being the most religious of all. That's easy to believe. And then he said the least religious were the Swedes. And then when he was asked about the United States, and he said, oh, that's easy. It's a nation of Indians ruled over by an elite of Swedes. And it certainly has that feel at times. You talk to people in the intellectual elites, they are certain that we are living in a secular age, that secularism is the only acceptable public philosophy, and that history's going their way. But as you and Philip Jenkins and so many others are pointing out, it's just not going that way.
No, that's exactly right. Well, you know, there are various evidences given for sort of a reversal of the appearance of secularization around the world. And one of them that you often hear is the resurgence of Christianity in American politics. You know, for instance, when you look at the 70s, you think about Chuck Colson and kind of the sensation of his book Born Again, and Jimmy Carter, you know, gaining office in 1976 as an evangelical, you know, a really out front evangelical, supported by, people forget, Pat Robertson at the time. And, you know, see, you see this resurgence of Christianity in politics, and people thought it was gone. You know, they just thought that throughout the 20th century that Christianity in America had sort of receded into nothing, and it comes back with this force. And, of course, the reality is it was never gone at all. It's just that the elites thought it was gone.
Yeah, and guess what? It's not. And yeah, I have to say, on the ground, it never looked that way. And that's where I think someone like Peter Berger is very helpful in talking about social location. In other words, there are people who inhabit very rarefied environments. I mean, if you live it in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and you only talk to people who have tenured positions at Harvard University, it just might be that the society is going to look fairly secular. But you go out a little, and it's not that way.
Well, that's right. I mean, you shared the quote about the Indians and the Swedes. When you talk about elites, I always think about the famous quote by the New York Times film critic Pauline Kael. When Nixon was elected in 1972, you know, he won by a huge landslide over McGovern. And Pauline Kael said, "I just don't understand how Nixon could have won. I don't know anybody who voted for him."
Yeah, and you know, that kind of delicious quote just tells you about the placement of the intellectual elites. And you look at that and you realize that they have, just as Berger documents and others as well, they really have created a rather secular space. But even there, as you hint at in your book, it's becoming less secular because they're being required to address these issues. Hunter Baker is Associate Provost at Houston Baptist University. His new book is entitled The End of Secularism, published by Crossway Books. Hunter, I want to ask you a direct question. My favorite of the chapters in your book is entitled Secularism, A Failed Strategy for Social Peace. Give us some background and kind of lay that out for us.
Sure. You know, the secularism is, if we were going to define the word, it would be public life without God or community life without God. You know, some people sometimes call it maybe a practical atheism. And the reason for it is that one of the ideas promoted by elites is that we have all these different religious beliefs, and they can't be reconciled, and there's no point in talking about it to each other, lest we get into violent disagreement. And so we should just avoid talking about it at all, and we should keep our religion private, you know, very near, very dear, and not bring it out into the public space. And the idea that is going to solve any of our problems, you know, we don't believe that in any other part of life, that if there's something that's very important, that, well, if we'll just avoid ever talking about it, it will get better. For some reason, we have people promoting that in the area of religious belief. And, of course, it doesn't work, because religious belief is not this isolated thing. It is embedded deeply into our culture, even in our politics, and we do have to talk about it.
Well, and there's no way that a person who believes in God can simply bracket that belief when we enter into public discussion. You know, I remember a conversation that I was able to overhear in which one of the participants was Robert Audi, a prominent philosopher in America,
yes,
who said that the only allowable public arguments were those that were absolutely secular, not only in content, but also in motivation. So in other words, you know, you have some people who want to see a form of secularism put into place in which you can't even be driven by a religious motivation and be expected to have any access to argument in the public square. My guest is Hunter Baker. We're going to be right back to continue this conversation. We're going to talk about why it matters today. Secularism is one of those concepts that certainly has a place in debate and study in the academy, but it also relates directly to how we live, the kind of culture we know, and the kind of civilization and culture we are building together. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. My guest today is Hunter Baker, who is Associate Provost at Houston Baptist University, a professor of government there. He is the author of numerous articles and the new book, The End of Secularism, published by Crossway Books. Professor Baker, let me turn to you for just a moment and ask you, how is it that this idea of secularism as the foundation for a very safe and peaceful public square, how is it that this actually got to a place of dominant influence in much of American public life? You document in your book that it wasn't some kind of process that just unfolded. There were people who wanted it so.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that the drive for secularism comes out of the French Revolution. You know, the American and French Revolutions occurred at approximately the same time. But there's a huge difference between the two. In the American Revolution, it was purely a revolution against the throne. You know, we were kind of rebelling against the British government, but not against the church. We were not trying to overthrow the church. In the French Revolution, they were trying to overthrow the throne and the altar. You know, kind of this tied up mixture of the king and the Catholic Church, and you had these sentiments. You know, I think it was Diderot who said that, you know, I wanted to strangle the last king with the guts of the last priest. And so this desire to take the church's influence away and go with this kind of this Rousseau-type idea of the general will. And, you know, the interesting thing is, we talk about secularism as it's something that's going to create social peace. Did this kind of secularism, you know, this dethroning of the church and substituting in the goddess reason, did it lead to peace in the French Revolution? It did not.
No, absolutely.
You know, the French Revolution is a disaster, a terrible thing that happens and ends in the reign of Napoleon, which is in its way equally disastrous. And then if you think about the regimes that, in my mind, most fully embraced secularism, such as Mao's China or Stalin's Russia or even Hitler's Germany. Again, this attempt to sort of throw the church out and start anew is disastrous each time.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the juxtaposition of timing between the American and French revolutions. I have to tell you, one thing for which I'm very thankful in terms of God's providence is that the American Revolution came first,
yes,
resulting in a government of ordered liberty, rather than in the embrace of anarchy that took place there in France. And by the way, Hunter, if you go to France now, you still see a civilization that has not recovered from that kind of catastrophic secularism.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that another point to pursue is, one of the things I talk about in the book is I far prefer a correct understanding of the separation of church and state. Not necessarily the kind that our jurisprudence dictates today, but the institutional independence of the church from the state. In Europe, where you had the state and the church get kind of intertwined together and the church dependent upon the state, you end up with this weak church, a church that is sort of a lapdog for the state. I call it a department of God. And I think that helps to explain why secularization got as far along in Europe as it did.
Yeah, when we come back in the next segment, I want to ask you about the case of Sweden. And
yes,
it is very instructive to look at not only Europe in general, but specific European nations. Each one has its own history. You know, Sweden coming from a very strong Lutheran background historically, but not today. And
right,
you may have seen this work from Harvard University Press that was looking at Sweden and the other Scandinavian countries. And just talking about the receding of the Christian worldview, I'll never forget this. It was just embedded in a paragraph, but they were interviewing a young couple, and they discovered that this young couple was married. And they asked, that is, the couple asked the researchers to keep their marriage a secret, because they said it would be more scandalous here for people our age to be married than to be cohabiting. Now, that tells you a great deal about what a secular society produces. It's a complete upside downing of religion, a complete reversal of morality. It's turning the civilization on its head. My guest today is Hunter Baker. He's the author of the book, The End of Secularism. And you'll find a link to the book at the website today for the program. Just go to albertmiller.com and you'll find the link under today's program. I'll also be mentioning it on my blog at the website at albertmiller.com. Hunter Baker is a very, very promising and increasingly influential evangelical intellectual, one I'm glad to have on the program today and glad to have you meet him. When we come back, we're going to talk about Sweden, and then we're going to bring it home. Just what difference does this make for how Christians ought to consider our life and witness in the United States of America? We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The Department of God, that sounds like something right out of a George Orwell essay, and yet it's a chapter in this new book, The End of Secularism, by Hunter Baker, who's associate provost at Houston Baptist University, professor in the Department of Government there. Hunter, tell me what you're talking about there in terms of Sweden and the Department of God.
Well, it's just a terrible, terrible story. You know, you have the Reformation, and of course the Lutheran Church in Sweden is this vital and powerful church. But what happens, as occurred elsewhere in Western Europe, as it did in Scandinavia, is that the church becomes dependent upon the state for its existence, and it becomes subservient to the state. And instead of having these preachers, you know, who are free to do as I think Luther wanted them to do, which is to call the state to righteousness, instead of sort of just serving the state as kind of an educated sort of bureaucrat, they instead became like clerks, and their values, instead of them kind of dictating values to the state and saying this is what God would have us do, they became more responsive to their paymasters, and the result is a very sad story of a church that loses its influence with the people. It becomes a baptizer. It marries people. It buries them when they die. It keeps some records, but in terms of having a big influence on their life, it loses that. And not only that, but it it becomes manipulated by the state to the point that today in Sweden, the state is actually to a degree controlling, you know, who can actually become a pastor in the Church of Sweden. And if you are relatively Orthodox, you have no chance. You have no career.
Now, just play that out a little bit. Let's compare and contrast that with the compact of religious liberty and also of a division between the church and the state in the United States. So compare Sweden with its Department of God to the United States. What does that look like to you as a scholar in this area?
Well, I mean, it's not only me. You take somebody as eminent as Rodney Stark, you know, he says that the reason for the impressive religious vitality of the church in the United States is because the church has been free, because the church has had to make its own way. It's had to justify its own worth, and it does that by preaching the truth. You know, and we see that the churches in America that have lost their commitment to do that, they have dwindled, and they continue to do so, and, you know, eventually they won't be with us much longer. But the churches in America, you know, take, for instance, the Southern Baptist Church or the more conservative elements of the Catholic Church, they continue to exert a strong influence, particularly for things like the life of the unborn child. On the other hand, you go to Sweden, where the church is under the thumb of the state, and you can actually end up having a pastor jailed for preaching against homosexuality. So it's a complete loss of the ability to speak or preach prophetically from their clergy.
So as you're speaking to American Christians, and in particular to American evangelicals, what's your word of warning? What is it that we should be watchful about, concerned about, and what kind of argument should we be careful not to make?
I think that we do not want to crusade against the separation of church and state. I think that we do that because we have confused the separation of church and state with secularism. And unfortunately, our Supreme Court sometimes does that too. We need to gain a proper understanding of the separation of church and state. And that is, it doesn't mean that the church can't have a powerful and vital role in the public square, but what it does mean is that the church does not depend upon the state in any way for its sustenance. The other thing that I think Christians need to hear in America is too many of us have bought into the idea that we should keep our faith private, that it is this, you know, it's just sort of this thing that warms our heart and it works for us, but it would be impolite to kind of push that out there for anyone else to consider. The very essence of the Christian faith is to be a witness. To be a witness means that you are telling about something that has happened not only in your own life, but you are telling about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And this is the other thing that bothers me, is that secularists try to treat all religions as though they're the same. The Christian faith is different. It does not have the same message as every other religion. It does not have the same likelihood of being true as every other religion. The Christian faith is one of a kind. It makes a public claim of historical fact that could have been disproven and never was.
Hunter Baker is Associate Provost at Houston Baptist University, Professor of Government there. Hunter, you begin your book by saying that you once were a secularist.
That's exactly right. I grew up in a household where we had a certain amount of tension over the issue of religion, and to me it seemed like it was better just to avoid it. So when I heard people say the name of Jesus or to talk about their relationship with Jesus or what God was doing in their life, I honestly felt embarrassed for them, and I felt embarrassed that they were talking about it. It made me uncomfortable, and I think that secularists operate in that fashion. They have failed to learn anything about the faith, and so they're very uncomfortable with it. To them, it's just as if I was sort of muttering magic spells or something. You know, they don't really understand what they're dealing with. And so they would rather we just didn't talk about it. Another metaphor that I use is, for instance, if they had four senses and we had five and we kept talking about that fifth sense, they would find it annoying and they suspect it doesn't exist and they don't want us to talk about it. And that's one of the points I make in the book, is that secularists are people. You know, just like the rest of us, they embrace a competing orthodoxy. They would prefer to have things work the way they like it. And so they push for their vision of things, and that's where the neutrality breaks down. They're pushing for what they want at the expense of believers.
Very interesting perceptions by a man who's the author of the new book, The End of Secularism. Hunter Baker teaches at Houston Baptist University. You've probably seen his byline in articles all throughout the media, but in particular at places like Christianity Today and National Review. Professor Baker, thank you for joining us today on the Albert Miller Program. Folks, I want to commend you not only to think about what he had to say here on the program, but go take a look at his book. You'll find a link at the website for today's program at albertmiller.com. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. So there it is, fascinating interview and conversation with Hunter Baker, author of the new book, The End of Secularism. And yet, when we come to the end of this program, I just want to point out that while we're talking about the end of secularism, let's be clear, there are still those who would very much like to see this society and culture move in an explicitly secular direction. And in particular, you think about the challenge of the new atheism. Last night, I was at the University of Louisville here in the Red Barn, big student activities building, speaking to a packed house on my book, Atheism Remix, which is the challenge of the new atheist, a Christian response to that challenge. And I was very thankful for that dialogue. Wonderful young people filling that room. Good discussion. I talked for about 30 to 40 minutes on the argument in my book, the analysis I offer in the book, and then we had an open forum. And let me tell you, in that open forum, it really was a very interesting exchange of ideas. And several of the people who spoke identified themselves as atheists, and led to the kind of conversation, the kind of respectful intellectual conversation you hope to have. It's an opportunity that's all too rare in this society, where so often we talk at each other and over each other and around each other, or we just don't even try to communicate at all. So I was very, very thankful for the Atheism Remix event last night at the University of Louisville. And if you'd like to know more about that, let me tell you my website at albertmoeller.com. You look up in the upper section of the blog, you'll see an article, a post on that event, and you'll find links today to the audio and tomorrow to both the audio and the video, so that if you weren't there, you can join us as well. There are all kinds of resources you will find at the website at albertmoeller.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R.com. But the Atheism Remix issue and forum last night, the author forum in which I spoke last night at the University of Louisville, is up at the website, dealing with many of the same issues that we talked about on the program today. But in particular, trying to lay out what's really going on with this movement known as the New Atheist. Perhaps you've heard about them, and you've had someone engage you in conversation about Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett, Sam Harris, and Christopher Hitchens, the whole idea of this new, bold, and assertive atheism. Well, just be aware that is a movement. It's a movement that's selling books by the hundreds of thousands. It's a movement with a lot of influence in the culture. It's a movement made up of people who will tell you right up front in their books that they're frustrated by the very thing we were talking about here today, and that is that the future has turned out to be not quite so secular as many people in the secular wing of American culture had certainly hoped back in the 20th century. Now, I mentioned that my concern is theological, and I believe that the reason why the future is not secular is because we're not made a secular people. And what we read in the scriptures, that God has implanted within each one of us a knowledge of himself. And even in a sinful world, given all of our capacities to hide the truth from our own eyes, when we close our eyes at night, it's very, very hard to believe that there is no God. That's at least a place to start a conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.